Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello everyone, it is Red Men Radio. We're just debating the fact that Bailey's not from here, so we're just taking the piss out of him, which is...
That's on par for most days.
Fair game, yeah. Like, yeah. How do you say the word bald? Because he said bold.
Bold.
Hang on, Bailey. What do you call the game where you have to touch a person on the shoulder and then run away in the schoolyard game?
Tag.
Okay, tag. I'll accept tag. You think it's called tig. Down south,
it's fucking
weird. Anyway, kickoff question this week comes from Beatenberg X. You're going camping and take three Liverpool past or present with you. You have to share a tent with one. Who do you take and who do you share a tent with? I'm joined by Tom Dutton, by Ross Chandley and by Chris Pajak in a clockwise formation away from me around the table. I'm going to come with Tom Dutton.
Very descriptive
first.
For the listeners there, Paul.
Absolutely.
I was going to say, we're not Liverpool players past or present, so you couldn't take us camping.
I know what I want to.
No, that's not a fair play.
I think the used to it'd be fine camping. I just wouldn't want to share a tent with any of you.
Yeah, no, that's also fair. I've gone for Gerrard and Carragher to start off with. They can have their own tent. I just want campfire stories. Right. And who better for campfire stories than them two? Just like hidden things that you didn't know from certain football games. Be like, yeah, it'd be really, really interesting. And if there's someone sharing a tent with me, we haven't described how big the tent's going to be. So I've gone with like a two-man that you take to Glasgow.
You mean a two-man that is just a one-man tent?
Exactly.
Really?
Yeah. So what I was thinking is the smallest Liverpool player ever. So I asked just before this. So we'd have a Spearing, Shaqiri, Moreno. I don't know. I don't go further.
We just
back
guessed,
than that.
By the way. We didn't check this out in any shape or form.
Anyone knows who the smallest Liverpool player is? Like, Sammy Lee's pretty small, isn't he?
Yeah. But like someone like thin, small. And just so they can be in the corner. And
what you're describing, though, is I reckon they're all really. I mean, Jay Spearing seems sound, so I don't want to. But like Moreno, imagine having to share a tent with Alberto Moreno. Do you not just do your head in?
Well, it depends. If he goes to sleep early, no, I'm the drunk one who like wanders in and crushes.
If you open his hoverboard at 3 a.m, mate.
That's true.
It is, yeah. Mm,
yeah. It's true. It's fucking annoying.
Ross, have you
gone? Similar sort of reason to Tom. I've gone Carragher because I thought he'd just get smashed. Pretty funny. Fowler, similar reason to think he'd be funny, and a footballing idol for me, so I like that. For some reason, I kind of thought the camping thing was kind of like in the middle of a desert, so you kind of need some sort of protection.
Yeah.
So I've gone for sharing a tent with Virgil, just so I can be Little Spoon and he can tell me everything's all right.
you can be his jetpack.
I'll be happy with that.
Where are the deserts around Liverpool?
What? It doesn't say Liverpool, does it?
That's true, but like, where are you going camping?
What does it say?
Are you flying to
covering all bases, Tom? In fact, if it's in Liverpool, I don't care. I'd still pick Virgil.
Just
all of the reasons. Okay. I love just Chris Pajak as an expert camper.
Well, I don't think I'm an expert camper.
You did Duke of Edinburgh, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I mean, like 20 years ago.
I mean, compared to the average man, there was normal people, and then there was like the Duke of Edinburgh's you're outdoorsy types who love orienteering and those climbing trainer shoe things. Which I know you've got.
Walking shoes. Yeah, the fucking boss. Yeah, exactly. I'm all in on the walking shoes.
Exactly, this is what I mean. You're bang up for all this shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've clearly got the best answer.
I haven't, actually, to be fair. I wanted someone short and small to share a tent with.
Yeah.
So I've gone Wee Joe. Also good think show. That, you know, if I need to, I can beat him up and chuck him outside and there ain't much he can do about it. He's quite malleable that way, I reckon.
Okay.
And the other two, I went for a couple of answers that, like, we get asked these types of questions all the time, and I realised that I quite often just pick the same answers over and over again. So I've gone Campfire Stories in a similar vein to Tom, but I've gone Julian Dix and Neil Ruddock, because if you're going to go out and have a bit of a beer with two fellas from that 90s era Liverpool side, those those two are going at it big time. And I actually think that, like, Steven Gerrard won't have as good stories as them because he came in at Sports Science time and all that type of stuff, whereas they were just the arse and the bacon butties and pints at lager.
Before a match.
They'll have some incredible stories.
Similar to that, it's Dietmar a man.
Yes.
Because he just can't shut up. I've been in a cab with Dietmar a man after like five pints and the biffy chat, and he didn't even know who I was, basically. Like, he really had no problem saying, that's very interesting stories, which will never be repeated. And then you pick someone like, so probably a Carragher. It's people who bring out the worst in each other.
Yeah.
That's what you want in that situation because you don't have to share the tent in there.
Risha and Bellamy.
I was thinking that was the first thought.
Like that, yeah. Sparkles, let's be honest. Nature's just boring, isn't it? So you want, and when you get back, it's not like what you're going to do. You can kind of watch the telly when you get back to your camp. You can go out and explore nature. Great fun, all that. But when you come overnight, you need sparks to fly. I just want to be able to sit back in my camping chair and just watch it all unfold. But on the who I shared a tent with, Milner. You know why? Very sensible man. I can't be dealing with the kind of personality type that Tom describes.
Yeah.
I don't need someone. If I'm forced to share, I need someone who's going to want to go to bed at a reasonable hour and not disturb me sleep.
I mean, to have your clothes up 4 in the morning or folded up ready to go.
I'm undies for me and all fans, like, you know, which would be absolutely
spot
on.
That's glamping, Paul. Camping's meant to be, you're meant to be covered in mud. You're meant to like have to take your wellies off as you're in the tent because it's that terrible. I'm describing my Glastonbury.
I didn't say, way, I think, because I had me steel, when I went, the only time I've been to a festival, multiple day festival, I just had my steel toe cap boots and never took them off for like the 4 days or whatever I was there, like, you mean, so, taking the thing off now. I'm definitely more glamping than, to be honest.
I know when I went, I've been to Glastonbury 3 times, and once I went with Kat, and it was not nice for Kat going camping with me, you know what I mean, because you can wet whitewash, but it's really not a good clean.
No.
And she once opened the tent while I was on my back with my legs in the air, scrubbing my anus with wet wipes. And she's never really looked at me the same since, to be honest with you.
How is she still with you?
I don't know. I don't think she's got much choice, to be honest with you.
She walked in on it.
I thought it was
she just had enough and decided to like just shame you.
She opened the tent and I was literally on my back with my legs in the air, fucking like this, and have a good old scrub.
Is that
with wet wipe?
With wet wipe, obviously.
What's the Paul Rudd film? So this is 40, and there's literally a scene where his wife walks in and doing pretty much the same thing. Yeah, you don't. Do you wink at her and tell her to get off
the
day?
Part of me may have winked at her, but it wasn't nice.
Brilliant. So anyway, this is the Liverpool podcast that we do.
Swiftly moving on.
Just joining us, welcome. News: Virgil van Dijk. We knew it already, didn't we? But it was confirmed that he won the Player of the Year. The last centre-back to win it was John Terry, apparently. So, Tom, as expected, there was a bit of a late push, wasn't there, with the Raheem Sterling stuff, which, to some extent, I think, fine. You know, if Sterling won, it's not like he's had a very, very good season, similarly like a Mo Salah or whatever, but this has been the talk since, September, really, and it's never gone away because Virgil's class.
Well, he's completely transformed a Liverpool side. You talk about our weaknesses were defensively in terms of aerial corners and stuff and set pieces, and just he hasn't let any team create chances past us. You're talking about Alisson getting 20 clean sheets in a season, and a lot of that's down to just not letting teams create at all. And it's the way that he talks through the team. He knows exactly everyone's position. It's weird. He knows what he wants the centre forwards to do. It's like he's mind controlling them. It's fantastic to watch. And there's no one better than World Football right now. I don't think you can make arguments for other people, but in terms of what he's done to transform this Liverpool side, there's no one better.
I agree with that. And it's just nice, isn't it? Because, Ross, it's always a mark, I think, of where your team is. When you've got players winning those awards, you know, the team of the year is filled with Liverpool players as well. And obviously Man City, fair play. But these are good pointers towards where you are, really. And we and Chris talked a bit about this on our podcast, about like the Pogba thing. And everyone's been discussing the Pogba thing, sure. That feels like a real outlier. That feels like a bit of a random one, whereas, you know, they're crap, and that's a good thing for United to have someone like Pogba in there. Whereas for us, it'd be weird if we didn't have players in there. But ultimately, Virgil van Dijk has been so far and away the best centre half in the league. it's nice for him to get the recognition that he is so comfortably that it's almost not in doubt.
Yeah, I think it's nice he's a defender for a change. I think everyone kind of appreciates that. You know, normally like, no, not the Ballon d'Or. Yeah, the Ballon d'Or is always like a striker or something like that because they get recognised for the goals. Yeah. Whereas because it's not an attractive position, a defender, it's kind of like...
He's made it attractive.
Yeah, he has done his dirty work that he's all done. And it's what he's, like Tom said, the difference he's made to that team. So Sterling is very good, but he's in a team full of, I don't know, superstars that are, you know, 13, 14. So he's going to do that, whereas he's come in, completely changed the defence, not just by himself, I don't think. I think Robertson, Trent have all upped the game since he's come in, and Alisson has as well. But he's upped Liverpool's defensive, not just attacking threat, but defensively as well.
We're not even 18 months away, Chris, from people going £75 million.
It's stupid. And listen, you know, 2 years ago, all the talk, 18 months ago, all the talk was Klopp can't make a side that can defend well. Now listen, Virgil van Dijk for me absolutely deserves player of the season, but it's not a one man thing being a defence, and that's where having Trent Alexander-Arnold and having Andy Robertson in there, having Alisson in there with a legitimate shot at being the goalkeeper is also part of the reason that Virgil van Dijk is the player of the season. Because you know, even last season, you know, we probably conceded over 50 goals in the Premier League. We're probably down about 30 on that, aren't we? You know what I mean? I think we've conceded about 20 at the moment, something. So it's crazy how good everybody's got around them, like the lads have said. But Virgil has been so far and away the best player in the league. I think it would have been a travesty of justice to give it to anybody else, to be honest, because as Ross says there, yes, Sterling's had a great season, but I also legitimately think Liverpool could have had two of the three forward positions sewn up. And I think legitimately Liverpool could have had four of the back five shown up.
It depends what the criteria is as well, because I think the case with Sterling was that the stuff that he was doing off the pitch as well, that makes him kind of a player of the year in that respect. You know, being a voice for, you know, ethnic minorities and standing up to the media and stuff, he's applauded for that around the world. And it's a case of, I know he got the Writers' Award, and that feels like pity to me. I think he does deserve it, but you know, they've slated him for years and years and kind of gone, oh, we feel less guilty now by giving it to him. But at the same time, he does deserve it.
Well, a lot of this,
though. Anyway, the wind blows.
That was nice.
That's it. Two Queen songs in 2 weeks that we've done on the podcast.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what the media do, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When the wind changes direction, they change songs. What they're doing. Like.
Yeah, everyone's all over Freddie Mercury at the moment because that film was
good. It's a good film.
It's interesting, but we talked about this, about what's great is the media is responsible for these things ultimately, because players don't watch all the football. They very rarely watch any football other than the actual football they're involved in. So much of this is just you vote for who...
He voted for Harry Kane, didn't he? Well, Sterling. Yeah. And Van Dijk voted for his
tactical voter.
Yeah. I wonder how many players have sat there and gone, I don't want to come up against Virgil, so that's why they voted for him. Because Troy Deeney, was it, who said he's the hardest player to play against. How many strikers I've looked at him and just gone, what do we do this time? How do we beat him, manager? What do we do? Because I don't know. Yeah. I don't have the pace. I don't have the skill. I can try and play a 1-2 round him, but exactly right.
Gotcha.
He's got everyone round him to give him that, to give him the basis to kind of defend on. I mean, he's the basis. He kind of drops off and lets everyone defend. But the whole unit's so good that teams are just looking at it and going, what do we even do? So
Klopp teams can't defend. Yeah. And all you need is the right pieces to the puzzle, because listen, Virgil van Dijk for me is the best centre-half in the world, but he's the best centre-half in the world because he plays in our system. He's perfectly suited to that, which is why Klopp will probably tell you this as well, if anyone was ever to ask him. There are good centre-backs in the world, but they might not be as good a fit for our system. And that's why he waited so long for Virgil van Dijk.
This is the reason why Liverpool would never have a midfielder in that team of the year, because they're not the name. Virgil's the perfect blend of being, he's a big name, he's a big character. It's so blindingly obvious how good he is at football, and also he's bolstered by the system. Another thing is, he'd be the best centre half in the world if he played for Man City, and he could go into any of the top teams in world football and probably still be the best centre half in the world. But we are, in addition to that, you're right in saying that we are a collective, which is why, again, Liverpool's midfielders aren't... We've often got fashionable midfielders, which is why, again, Pogba ends up in a team, whereas you'd probably say Gini Wijnaldum's probably had a more consistently better season.
I saw someone comparing the two of them on Twitter this morning. Virgil van Dijk with Vincent Kompany from like 2010-11 or something, and all the stats that Vincent Kompany had. And I look at it and he had like 80 more interceptions, 70 more clearances and all this. Now, there was a legitimate shout, I think, at the time for Vincent Kompany to be one of the top three defenders in the world, if not the best defender in the world. But he was also made to look better by the fact that he had a lot of work to do, because that Man City side was a very attacking side and he was brilliant at putting out fires. I'm not sure Virgil van Dijk would be as good as that Vincent Kompany at putting out fires. But what he is good at doing is making sure that there's never any fucking smoke in the first place. Yeah. And that's the difference. So you can't compare the two on stats. Mm-hmm. It just means that the Man City team, in general, were much worse defensively than this Liverpool side.
How many assists and goals has he got? Think of how many assists that he's got. Like a ball over the top, inch perfect.
I mean, I'm not sure his assists necessarily are fair a statistic.
Probably got two or something.
Yeah. For a centre-half, though.
Well, yeah, there was the one
but I mean,
Trent
there's two
the
that he's got this season just when he's totally miskicked it, basically, and has ended up playing stuff. No, I know your point. Yeah. He's, got, look, he's just a complete centre-half.
Yeah, he's got fantastic.
There's any doubt. I mean, that's why you have to go back to John Terry, I think. You know, I don't think John Terry is as good or as a good footballer as Van Dijk, but in terms of absolute influence, great leader on the pitch, technically brilliant, scored loads of goals as well at that time, and was in one of the best sides in the league. So yeah, I think it's only fair, really. And I think it helps. He's got just an aura about him, Van Dijk, hasn't he? He's got the media on his side. People are interested, and people are talking about him. You know, there's every reason that you could probably, Man City fans would probably make a case for Laporte being just as good as him this season. I don't know. I've not seen enough of him, to be perfectly honest.
He's been bloody good,
but he's not. But he doesn't seem to have. And this is a lot of this is great that the media are behind him, because you need that. That's why. That's one of the reasons why he's won it, is because everyone's talking about it. People are being told that Virgil Van Dijk's the best centre half in the country, and you can't fabricate that. That's just a thing that. I think that happens along the way as well. Just quickly then, before we crack on, talk about a little bit about Huddersfield and then mainly about Barcelona. Neil Critchley expected a shake-up of the under-23 squad in the summer. I got this from the Anfield. I thought it was really interesting, Ross, that they've fallen short. This team's been a bit crap by all accounts this season. And look, the under-18s are drawing all the plaudits. Obviously, just won the FA Youth Cup. Yeah, I think they could win their league as well, I think I'm right in saying. But I like this because you get this sometimes, you get a kind of a crossover generation, and there's a few lads in there that they've kind of brought into both of the ranks. There's a lot of lads who are just going to miss that, are missing that out and jumping up to the first team. Like Trent should still be in that team by all accounts. We're going to see Brewster pretty much straight in the first team squad. With Keanu Hoover's probably, he's a bit young, so he'll probably hang around. But I like that, that it feels for me, it's a clearing the decks, because that under 18 side, you want to clear a path for them to the first team, basically.
Yeah, I think it's a good sign if, you know, we're not keeping all the people for the sake of doing it as well. I know quite a few of them were linked with Rangers again already for next season, so you can afford to ship people out when there's options there. Why wouldn't you go and take that option? Yeah. You know, those lads that have just won the cup the other night, you know, they're showing they've got a character behind them and the unity of a group to come up together. And it'd be pretty weird to kind of separate that off and kind of go, well, actually, some of you can come up with the rest, you can't, because you just unsettle a whole team there, don't you? So it makes sense to bring the whole lot up together.
You've got in that squad, you've got your Juanmas and you've got your Shamal Georges and your Ben Woodburns, who, like, there's probably, if this next crop coming up, and I've been told like two crops underneath that is meant to be the best they've ever had, like the 13 under 13s, that are meant to be absolutely unreal. I think it's under 13s, are absolutely unreal. So they're probably looking at, maybe that's they're emboldened a bit, Tom, and they've gone, well, hang on, these lads are fine, but we might as well just ship these out, because they're trusting that they can constantly renovate it from within the academy.
Yeah, that level's always been a bit weird, isn't it? Because you're still playing against the kids, so you're getting your positioning, you're getting the style of play, you're getting all of that, but you're not getting the combativeness, you're gonna be thrown about by this literal man, and you need to stand up to that if you want to play at a high level. So I think a lot of them players could benefit by going out, but I agree, you want to be having a path for all these young kids. I can't wait. Ben's gonna do a show at the end of the season, going through the whole of the season and showing everyone's development, who's the next big thing, who's the people who've not really been that good. It's going to be a really, really good show. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit in it where they went to the under-18s cup final the other day, so there's going to be a nice little piece on that. It's going to be a great show, and I'm really interested to see, because I don't follow it too much, if I'm perfectly honest. So I want to see it from their point of view, from Ben's point of view, who does follow it, and see exactly just what we need to expect.
The interesting thing for me is, I mean, everybody's been talking over the last few weeks about Ajax, and I'll bring this back to the under-18s and your point exactly, Paul, about the under-23s and stuff. Ajax and Dutch football 6 years ago had a complete revamp. Do you know about this?
Is this an Ajax position? Because they brought Overmars and
so they brought Edwin van der Sar and Overmars in, but what they did in Dutch football was they enabled almost the Spanish model where Ajax 2 can play in the other leagues. Yeah. And it's the crop of players that we're now seeing at Ajax who have got to the Champions League semi-final will be playing Tottenham are the first almost group of players that got to play in proper Dutch football. And this is what Liverpool and all the teams in England need to be able to combat and need to work a way around. So to bring it back to Liverpool now, they are still playing kids like you say, Tom, you know what I mean? And they need to be able to play men, you know what I mean? And so what Liverpool have to do, and you're right, Paul, is clear that path so that these 18s are playing 23s.
Yeah.
Rather than, they can't go and play against men at 17 years old. They're too young.
There's no, and there's no point in 21s playing 23s football.
Exactly. Yeah. So at some point, someone's going to have to do something that changes that, you know, maybe it is England, and I don't think it will be where you can get a second team and higher up the league. It's so much better for the lads' developments, and Ajax are proving that point right now.
Who was the coach who we had who went over to South America? He was he was the under-23s coach when Gerrard was the 18s. Yeah. Michael Beale.
Yes,
and am I right in thinking he's at Rangers now with Gerrard? Yeah. But anyway, he came out with a tweet the other day saying about this, about the B leagues thing is a massive thing. It'd be the B team stuff. And everyone in this country naturally fucking, you know, turns inside out when you talk about it, because it is a bit of elitism, and we've got so many historic football clubs in England that makes it hard. Which you wouldn't like say, turn round to this perfectly viable football club. We've got 10,000, you know, week in, week out, they're not allowed to play in the English league anymore because Liverpool's B team needs to go in there. But you're right, that's what we're now competing against on the continent. Barcelona have had a few years. That's why La Masia were, just because you've got these lads going up against proper competition week in, week out, blooding themselves. So that's the second division. That's the Segunda division. That's like, imagine we had a B team in the Championship.
Exactly. And but it's all well and good sending one lad on loan to Derby. You know what I mean? But the Barcelona lads are playing with the rest of their teammates who they'll eventually get into the first team with. They've got such a leg up on everybody else because they've brought that entire team through from 13 years old to fucking 25, and then they're playing and they're like, yeah, we've been doing this for years. We know how to score goals together. We know what they're going to do against us. It's so much easier for them to dominate.
I really like just the most important thing for me is you look at like Paul Gladson, you look at Bobby Duncan, and I just think, get everyone out of their way. Because if they look good enough, they've done everything they can to prove their worth. Clear any, because Bruce still come, as we said, to the first team squad, and then get them as much experience together and do that as much as you can. That makes sense. You could, because you're right, create an under-18 squad, try and bring them all up together to the next level up. Because as we say, if you get into 2021 and you've not really played for Liverpool, you're probably not going to. Whereas, you know, if you can have as much on your side by the time you're around that age, hopefully you'll be ready.
I think it falls into place with the whole Kirby setup as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they're bringing both teams together. Not only are they playing at a high level, they're training with our first team as well. So the fact they can learn with that and pair it with playing hard football,
it's going to be very exciting. I'd kind of be interested to see. You know how when you play the youth, and everyone's like, oh, you're throwing an FA Cup game. Imagine if our under-18s had come through like that, was so good, that you'd just go, you know what, we're literally going to give you our under-18s here because they work better as a team than if we just put someone
it's
in at right back.
It's pretty much
and
what
just Bengi
used to do, you know, in that golden era.
Until the final.
Until, you know, but that's what they used to do. You'd always see who their left back was going to be in three seasons, would be playing in that game, you know, and then you dot a couple of young, you know, older, more molded heads in there or whatever. But yeah, the last time we did it was 2004, 2005 in the League Cup, and again, yeah, like you said, we got all the way to the final, bombed them all out. I mean, to be fair,
we bombed
that
them
side,
the semis, didn't we?
I don't know, but the side that side would have got. I don't even know, because we got past Spurs. When did we play? I can't remember. But anyway, they did brilliantly, and then basically for Chelsea, there was no. I mean, like I say, that we had David Raven and that team and all kinds, they'd have been absolutely murdered by Chelsea, but never mind. Just quickly then, before we move on, the Mail are reporting that Oxlade Chamberlain's going to get a 1-year contract extension. Because I love this. It's just a thing. It's like saying, we don't need to, because his contract already runs through. He's got 3 years left on his contract. Just basically saying, you've missed a year of football, we're going to give you that year football back at the end of your contract, effectively. Talk about, like, settling his nerves. You've basically bought him his loyalty for life.
Yeah, you absolutely have, and you've probably got him at a really cheap rate. Being a business knobhead, you know what I mean? You know, he plays another season and then you're renewing the contract and all of a sudden you're probably throwing an extra 100K on top. So they must have a lot of trust first and foremost in his recovery.
Yeah.
If there is a fucking doubt at all creeping in, they are not giving him that contract, but they know that he's absolutely sound. He's, as you say, he's
sound. Now Fakir's going,
The reception he got the other day was unbelievable.
I nearly fucking cried.
Yeah, it was genuinely. Even when he was playing, just with all the subs before the game, and they're having a laugh, and I was
so
watching
happy,
him. I was made up for him coming on at half time, and he's clapping each side of the ground, and you're just thinking, this man's waited so long. It was 367 days,
was it?
Of the last time he played, and he got injured, and you're thinking, this man's worked so hard to get back there. He deserves everything he's got. I'm made up. He's back there. I didn't think we were going to see him at all. I remember Klopp doing a press conference, I think it was, and he was like, oh, I mean, we might see him. And we were all like, ooh. And then we've actually seen him. And
that's, he's good.
Yeah, yeah.
That was that moment, because I was working at the time, so I didn't get to watch.
Where were you?
The Pez League regional final season. So I had the last 20 minutes up on my phone while the final of this, the co-op tournament was on. That was around the time, obviously, Oxlade Chamberlain come on, and that moment where he does the little give and go and gets to the box, he's like, oh, go on, mate. Just stick it away. And Lerzel didn't touch a fucking ball all game. Turned into an actual goalkeeper for that 1 second of his life. But good on Liverpool, good on Oxlade Chamberlain.
You know the Lerzel thing before we move on? When he came out at half time, did you see him? So obviously, you know, you normally get to the penalty area and they're a little bit unsure whether to clap or not. He literally clapped from when he crossed the line near the halfway line all the way in. I've never seen someone so happy to get the applause at the cop.
Maybe like...
He just let in three. He was getting a really good applause, to be fair. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And then so cool. Same again.
Honestly, mate, he was so happy. Like, so gracious. Ooh. And then we, you know,
he's going to be our backup goalkeeper next season, isn't he? That's yeah, the name first. Yeah.
Watch the Red News Roundup show on the RedMenTV.com this week for more Liverpool news each and every week in depth and detail. Our sponsor this week is Threads for Reds. Chris, tell us some more about Threads for Reds.
Threads for Reds are an incredible company selling threads for Reds. Ooh. There's loads of nice T-shirts.
Just individual threads.
Yeah, just what they do is it's really clever. They mould them all together.
Mesh them.
Into garments that
okay.
one can wear.
Oh, that sounds brilliant. That sounds well better.
No, I thought so too. Yeah. Listen, the mates of ours, we've teamed up with them again. They've put on the 10% discount and stuff. So the code is REDMEN10 and it's capital REDMEN10 as the numbers. The Virgil van Dijk one is apparently flying out and rightfully so. We should be showing our support for them. You'll have seen me wear this shirt. There's a couple of designs there for it. It's absolutely superb. And Simon, who runs Thread for Red, showed me what's upcoming. And my word, some belter designs coming up.
Absolutely. So yeah, if you watch on YouTube, we'll put some pictures up so you can have a little look. But go over to the web. What's the website?
Threadsthreads.com.
Simple as that. And yeah, use code REDMEN10, all caps followed by numbers, to get 10% off as well. So you can get your fit Virgil van Dijk t-shirt to celebrate Liverpool's Player of the Year. Huddersfield Town. Naby Keita, Ross. I was talking to Chris before about, have you got any open bets still on this season? And I realised one I had, which I've ultimately been miles wrong on, but I now feel a bit more vindicated. I had Naby Keita score 10 Premier League goals this season, and he's left it too late. But I'm just so made up, and all the praise he's getting, and you can see what a talent he is. And I kind of link into a thread we've had running for the last couple of weeks about how Liverpool are not just finding their feet, but Liverpool seem to be getting better and better as the end of season kind of careers towards us. I think Naby's absolutely typified.
Yeah, it's come at the right time as well, not just the business of the season, but I think we're all getting to a point of frustration with him. We're kind of going, you know, you need to kind of bed in here now. You know, it's been in nearly a year, or 2 years, if you include the fact we bought it and waited for him. He came in the start of the season, was good for 2-3 games, and then he's kind of disappeared. But to be fair, other people were doing well in that midfield, so you kind of think, don't just throw him in.
He's starting to look like you who ordered anything off an Instagram advert or a Facebook advert, and like this piece of technology, it looks really cool and it looks boss, and then it takes ages to be delivered because it's coming from China or whatever, and when you get it, it's just a little bit underwhelming compared to the video that you showed of. Yeah, starting to feel like that about
it's his YouTube videos, isn't it? Yeah. We all watched them, we all did research on thought, oh, we can do this. He showed signs of it early on, then dipped off, but we changed formation, didn't we, and changed system as soon as he came in. So then he had to go and learn that. But I said other people were doing well, and it was kind of like we've seen him again. It was consistency for me, which is what he's shown recently, which kind of gives me more encouragement. So as soon as he got that goal against Southampton, you know, he's just gone on a run of confidence. I think that's what that was the problem was with him. But I think we still do it now. We're just going, you know, we want people to do well from the start. But if they don't, then we just shoot them down. Think some people think they're not going to make it. And I think it was more opposition fans jumping on the back of going, oh, you said he was the next best thing, and he's shit. And he's like,
does it matter anyway, though? Because you're looking at it and going, we know as Liverpool fans now, each of one of us should know, if they don't hit the ground running, Klopp's going to work with them and make sure that they do. You know, their track record is incredible at the moment. Yeah. That fucking team of Michael Edwards and Jürgen Klopp and everybody else that's involved. And we've got to give these players opportunities and chances. And, you know, it might not work first and foremost, but it will work. And Naby Keita's been in just unbelievable form over the last few weeks. One of the things that I know we're talking about Huddersfield now. You know what? I'll park this point for the Barcelona stuff. Mm-hmm. But he was brilliant. I mean, literally from the first second. When he gets his goal, 16 seconds or 15 seconds in, he was superb.
But the thing is, for me, that's kind of surprised me, is his position on the field. When he first came in, I was expecting him to be quite high up, sort of what Henderson's doing now. I think that's been a godsend for him in terms of he's allowed to be a bit further back. We charge him now with picking the ball up behind the halfway line and then bringing it forward and the ball over the top. I remember like first few games he played in, he beat that man with the little crow turn and played the ball over to Salah, and you're like, ooh. And then you've seen him further forward, and I kind of like him further back. I like him being able to calm the ball down and playing the right pass, getting a bit of confidence on the ball and not being... I think if you put someone up top like that, you're not giving them much space to work, and you've seen just how hard it is, Mo Salah and Bobby Firmino and obviously Sadio Mane, but they're all used to it, you know what I mean? They all know what they're doing now. Salah's with like a trial of fire at the start of the season by putting them up against these centre-backs, and I think just allowing Naby Keita to be a bit further back, assess the field and see what he can do, has just bolstered his confidence massively.
What it is for me anyway, is, you know, when you're coming into that midfield now, we talk about it so often and yet we barely seem to remember it when we talk about how players take time to get used to positions. Naby Keita, I think, instinct is to go forward with the ball. I think that's something the Klopp's trained into him, Tom, where he said, look at when Milner plays there, look at when Wijnaldum plays there. He's playing it more like them in a defensive sense, because you've got to link up with Sadio Mane ahead of you, and you've got to link up with Robertson behind you. You can't just be you. You've got to be you in relation to where those other players are. And that's why it takes time. You're not learning one position. You're learning three, four, five positions. And that's why it's ultimately going to take time for
you. You can now see what the point was with Keita. And the point was, we talk about this transformative effect on the midfield. And we didn't get what Fabinho was in the first couple of months. And we were seeing Keita and we were starting to think, okay, well, we might get a little hint. Not unlike what we're seeing from him now. And the simple point is, he's playing basically in Wijnaldum's position, which we thought at the time he was going to be an upgrade on Gini. And Gini's clung on tooth and nail. Same way Milner has, to be fair. Same way a number of players have in our squad. They've done everything in the powers. They've raised the game. But you start to consider ceilings. And ceilings for me is goals and assists. And you can see now that Naby Keita, you know, we saw it in that... Spurs away game when he had that chance when Mane passes it to him and he probably should pass it to Salah and Keita puts it over the bar, but it was a counter attack where it started by Firmino drops in, he plays the ball and we've still got three guys on the attack. Keita's supposed to be able to do that. He's meant to reinvent box to box. We love Gini Wijnaldum as the box to box midfielder. I think he's great, but he's almost like 6 yard box to 6 yard, you know what I mean, at that point where he's getting into the box, he's causing problems. And that's the only way you can improve, because that's the only way you can improve Liverpool's team, is that if we're going to play 2 8s in our team, they both need to be capable of scoring between 5 to 10 goals a season.
I agree with the sentiment, but I disagree with the fact that we need the box to box. I actually think what Liverpool need is box to 10 yards in front of their box.
Yeah.
And all we do is we just pin teams in and go, well, we're going to win the ball back high up the pitch. And that's what Keita's good at. He's got that opponent half recovery stat is off the fucking scale. Yeah. And I think when we're at our absolute best and we're dominating a side, we're just camped on the edge of the area. You don't need to be box to box. You just need Fabinho right in the centre of the pitch, 15 yards outside of the area, and everybody else in front of him cramping the space. They can't get rid of the ball.
Halfway
they can't
line get to out. Their goal line.
Yeah, that's what you, that's yeah. essentially what yeah. you need. You don't need box to box. You need Fabinho in the two centre halves to cover that space, but you make it so difficult for them that they have to just hoof the ball clear. That's what it is.
I do some of the stats for the starting 11 and stuff, and some of the stats that he's got. I was looking for the Champions League game the other day. In the Champions League, he's completing over 50% of his dribbles. So he's beating a man 1 out of 2, which is ridiculous in the Champions League. Think of the teams that he's coming up against. That's so hard to do. I think he's having like 12 offensive duels per 90. And I think it's something like that. Like maybe even higher. I think it might be even 14%. 14 duels, defensive duels per 90. That's how good he is at just that recovery stuff, at being in the right position at the right time, as to do exactly what you say, pin teams in. And if it wasn't for two refereeing decisions, he would have got two penalties, which would have won us games this season. You know what I mean? And we don't even think about that because it never came off. But we could be comfortably top of the league now, if not. He would be a massive part of that as well, if not for two refereeing decisions.
Yeah, I look at it and you think about that next level of Liverpool. It's the increased stability and brutality that Fabinho offers, except he's obviously got that classy edge to him. It's like having a boulder wrapped in silk. Like, you know what I mean? That's basically what he is for us. And then you've got Naby Keita. And if Naby Keita, I've no doubt Naby Keita will score 10 Premier League goals next season if he continues to play like that. And that's where your next gear comes from. And to think that we've managed to produce what we've produced thus far this season without that up until this point is testament. I want to talk briefly then, we're kind of skating around Man City a little bit, but did anyone watch the Burnley Man City game?
Yeah.
I got on a plane. I got off the first plane as it was just about to kick off, and I was like, I was hoping to miss it all. And then I sat down, this fella had it on his phone, and then he proceeded to talk to me about it, and I didn't. I just wanted to avoid it completely. And then he turned it off to go on flight mode, and as he turned it off, I heard this thick Mancunian accent from behind me go, "Get in!" And I was like, oh, I bet they've scored. Yeah. And I had to live in that world of like, it all goes dark, Man City are 1-0 up. And I thought, it's okay, because I can have a flight of fancy, 2 hours, or like an hour and a half here, to have a flight of fancy of what might happen. And then I was ready to take, I'll wait till we land and I'll check it. And then we hadn't even come into land, and the fella next to me goes, "There's the full-time 1-0. I was like, oh,
they were hanging on Burnley as well, weren't they?
Even from like the hour mark, you know, you were talking about there about being camped in the other half. That's what City were doing against Burnley, and they were just hoofing it back to their defence. You're thinking they had no outlet at all, and it's like you got half an hour to go in. It's like they're going to score. It's just
they were punch drunk, weren't they?
Yeah, it's like it's just going to happen. Yeah.
But then, do you reckon if that goal doesn't go in, do you reckon City just turn it up to another level?
Why didn't he go with his head?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What a dick. Why did they wait for it to drop and kick
well,
it?
Well, even to block it in the first place is unreal, to be fair to
me. They had one after that as well, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, the save by, what's his name? The striker.
Oh. Striker?
Yeah, yeah, because he saved it. He handballed it in the box, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
I really
yeah,
wanted that to be that the story.
Him. Yeah, that was handball.
Imagine that's the story of, oh, it's 0-0, but they save it, you know what
but
I mean?
But then City coming out with that fucking fine margin shit yesterday, that's like, what's that about, you know what I mean? And here's the thing, how did you read that?
I thought it was a bit of a golden thing, to be honest with you. But a lot of people are saying, oh, they're just pointing it out. Like,
I, do you know what? I read it as, that's quite a big mark of respect towards Liverpool. Because
okay.
initially I was like, you fucking pricks.
Okay.
And then I was like, oh, so what you're saying is the league's coming down to really fine margins. And okay. I was like, oh, you know what? I can kind of deal with that. It's like, you're basically saying 11 mil is enough for you to win
it's
the league,
right
potentially.
It's
like,
the right time of the year to have that attitude, you know, like the right time of the season as well, man, because you're insulating yourself, aren't you? Fine, there should be some mutual respect shown between the football clubs or whatever. Not like Chelsea going, oh, anyone say Liverpool versus Chelsea? Yeah. Just get in the bin, you gang of fucking weirdos. Get in the Europa League bin.
You think you'd leave it till after the season?
Yeah,
though.
But no, I think in this one, I mean, if you're looking at it that way and as a mark of respect, fine, because the fine margins are going to decide it. If it goes down to the wire and then both teams win the final games, it will be, you know, there'll be more a point in it. Like, you know
Twitch
mean?
Isn't a place for respect. We should all know this.
Yeah, it's true.
That's not what they meant.
No, maybe not. But no, let's look at it that way for the sake of argument. But yeah, so of course everyone's hopes and dreams roll on to Brendan Rodgers Leicester. I've said this before, lads.
In the form table, Leicester.
People will continue to do it. People will continue to get sucked in. There's simply no way we don't. This doesn't go down to the last game of the season, and it come down to the most incredible.
Well, if Leicester beat City, it will go down to the last game of the season.
No, I mean like the last game, as in
Brighton need promotion.
Exactly.
Well, safety. Sorry.
Yeah, that's it. Brighton just doing something mad and against the odds, because everyone will think they'll beat Leicester, and they'll probably do it by there'll be a goal down this time round, and they'll win 2-1, and then everyone will go, well, there you go, that's done and dusted, because Brighton are shit and Brighton are shit. And then if I don't see how it's anything other than we're in Anfield and you get the murmurs of something happening around the ground. If we're gonna do it, that's all. I can't.
Do you know what? Do you know what I've noticed over the last few weeks and stuff? The amount of people that have come up to me, what do you reckon? Then knowing like, are we gonna win the league? And I just keep thinking to myself, it really doesn't matter what I think. I'm guessing. That's all I'm doing.
I guess, yes.
I'm guess yes, we're going to win, or I'm guessing no, we're not going to win.
What's your most common response?
Yes, but it doesn't really matter.
Mine is...
that's what I'm saying.
I believe we can, has been my answer now for the last 6 months.
The problem for me, not even problem, which is why I'm quite looking forward to the Leicester game. Me and Bailey were watching the Spurs City game, and City should have lost that game. And the reason they should have lost that game is because Spurs were through so many times. And all it took was a little bit of pacing behind. Because City, look, they're a fantastic side, but they don't get that very often. A lot of teams just sit in behind. So what I think Leicester need to do, I'm not the manager, but what
score
they
more than City.
Score more
get
than City.
Them,
get one. Yeah. Just get one. 1-0 and insulate yourself a tiny little
I'm going to say right
all
now, Vardy obviously scores.
Yeah.
He starts Mahrez and he misses a pen in the last minute.
My word, that'll be beautiful.
He's not taking pens for them again after us, is he?
But it is. It's a ball. It's a man trying to beat that last man. It's getting a ball through. You're not going to beat them by playing fancy football. City are too good at that. They've got the defenders that are too good at that. You need just to catch them on the break.
Yeah, Vardy, into space, yeah. Running a company.
Can Leicester get into the Europa League?
No.
No? Not at all, okay. Just a note, I wondered if Brendan
just want to end the season.
Which means they've got nothing to lose anyway, so they might just
sure,
do what they want.
Yeah.
Brendan's got three envelopes. Let's hope City's in one of them.
Right, we're going to talk a little bit about Barcelona in a moment. Before we do, Chris and I have got a brand new podcast, the Mate and Pajak podcast. The third one will be coming out this week. But have a little clip here. Chris talks about this whole Burnley thing and how we got all that excited about it and people changed their avatars and stuff. Yeah.
Our good mate Liam
Vizzy
made loads of Liverpool fans change their avatars to Ashley Barnes, which led to you being very confused and infuriated.
There was just loads of people with the same profile pic talking to me at the same time on the same thread on Twitter, and I was like, what the fuck's going on here? Who are you? Why do I need to now zoom in and try and look at your fucking name to find out who you are? Stop putting pictures of fucking Ashley Barnes in me fucking grid. It's doing me fucking head. It's ridiculous.
Why were you zooming in?
So I can see what the fucking little letters are. The at.
I like the idea that you were stuck in some sort of Twitter equivalent of that Neo versus Mr. Smith fight from one of the shit Matrix films, and it was just nothing but Ashley Barnes.
It's fucking everywhere.
spinning round in your room, holding your phone at arm's length, trying to knock away, digitally knock away. Knock away Ashley Barnes.
You're not bought into this as a thing.
I'm with you, Chris.
How did you tell?
I'm fair play.
How could you tell?
You were both a tiny bit animated in the clip. It was a...
Was it? Yeah, get over to the channel. We'll annotate. We'll leave the link in the description as well. Go over and subscribe. The third podcast will be out at the back end of this week. The first two are up now, so go and get involved with all of that good stuff. Barcelona. Third Queen reference in 2 weeks.
Barcelona.
Tom. The most exciting tie in a generation. And we can make a case for the Champions League final, of course, but it's the Messi thing, I think. I can't help but look past it. We've got to see Cristiano Ronaldo, but we played Ronaldo a couple of times already. We haven't seen Messi since he was a child. Yeah. He's the best player, basically, ever. And Barcelona are one of the best teams ever, 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 still are. And we get to go and play them in a two-legged game of football.
This season's been a season of tests. Loads and loads of different ways that Liverpool could fail, and we haven't. You know what I mean? We've got through so many different trials. This is the biggest one of the season. It might be the biggest one of Klopp's Liverpool. I just genuinely can't wait to see how this team reacts, because every other time I've had pure confidence in this team, and every other time we've come through it. Maybe we haven't completely got over the line, but we've always put in a performance that makes me proud of this team. So no matter what happens here, you can be proud and you can go in there. And you know for a fact, at Anfield, under the lights, it's going to be absolutely fantastic. And we're going to support the team through thick and thin. And they're going to do the business. That I just have no... I'm not nervous. Mm. And we're playing Barcelona. I'm not nervous at all.
I think that's right. Once a game, I kind of had this with Bayern Munich as well. And some of this comes from the league being such a big focus, of course, but it also stems from the league carries fear with it, fear of failure, because it's on a knife edge. You're not expected to win. No pressure on winning the European Cup in the same way. If you win the European Cup, it's just an amazing feat, and we are very close. And the closer we get, the more it becomes a thing. But I think you kind of put that pressure on when you get to the final. It becomes a bit more like that. But right now, like Tom says, it's just boss. I trust this Liverpool side. They play bloody brilliant football, and they've passed so many of these tests. As Tom says, that there's no real reason to be nervous about this, because you can lose it. But by and large, this is what it is to be a football fan of a good team.
I think it helps that you get two shots at it. So, if you lost 2-3-0, still, I think we all said in the Umbu, that's still not a bad result. You still trust his little side to pull something out of the bag.
I mean, to be fair, if we lost 3-0, that would be a terrible result.
I don't think we're out, though.
No, I don't.
And that was the point we made yesterday.
I think it's the sign of where we're at now. I don't think we're underdogs, and yet I don't think we're favourites. You know, this is the Barcelona side, as you just said, of like the great sides, and they've had Messi and Suarez, who are all on form. They've just won their league, and yet, you know, they didn't want to play us. And they still probably don't want to play us over two legs, because, you know, our Klopp's track record and the way that we're at now. And I think it's dead encouraging for us of saying, you know, we spoke about Naby Keita coming into form and playing. Fabinho, Ox is coming back here, I don't think he'll play a role. But everything's kind of going in our favour towards this business end of the season, kind of going, well, you know, we're better equipped this season than we were last season. We have a squad now that we didn't have. And you kind of go, well, actually, we can tailor that to who we play and how we want to play that game. Mm-hmm. So my opinion yesterday was, I think we'll kind of go like a Rafa-style European away. And set up for that. Whereas, you know, you take a result back to Anfield and you can go all out and dicks out and just dick him.
It's the beauty of being two sides. And I remember saying at the start of the Champions League campaign, Chris, that we were being trained to be a dominant in possession side, because you needed to be that, because if you want to win the league, you've got to be a flat track bully and you've got to be teams that park the bus. And we really struggled to switch back to the Liverpool of last season. We couldn't do both at the same time, whereas we seem to be finding that we're actually melding now into a team that can do both given any set of circumstances. And in that regard, that's why I'm excited about this game, is because if we're forced to be the counter-attacking side, all the best, because we're fucking lethal as the counter attack.
We saw it against Bayern Munich. That's what we did against Bayern Munich, and we dominated them in their own grounds. You know, this Liverpool side, as Tom says, as Ross has said, we will rise to any challenge at the moment. And Jurgen Klopp knows how to, as Ross already said, he knows how to win two-legged affairs. Mm-hmm. You know, we shouldn't be going into this game and scared in any way, shape, or form. Yes, you show Messi the respect that he deserves because he's the greatest player that's ever existed. But that doesn't mean to say that we haven't got three of the top five players in world football right now as well. They've got one. Mm-hmm. I think we've got three of the top five.
Okay. I think that's a very interesting point.
Do you remember on the stat show, sorry Paul, where basically Chris looked at all the European teams, and it was us and City. We were above Barcelona in terms of teams that were ranked highest, you know what I mean?
On 538, they have Manchester City ranked as the best team in the world. They have Liverpool ranked second. They have Barcelona ranked third.
We're up there.
And that's the point, isn't it? And I look at this. And there's
can we get Anfield second leg?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And I mean, that's the one thing that Man United obviously didn't have.
Yeah, they don't play Anfield.
Exactly, yeah. And they never will. But that, you know, you're right, because we do have that little safety net, and so much as similar to, you know, as anything. I don't know. I think Barcelona will obviously see this as their best chance, but I'm excited about that. I've not even entered my head that we'll lose this. We might not win, but I can't.
I've got confidence.
Can't see us getting battered, like,
in the fact that our wingers do the defensive work. And I know, obviously, when Suarez was there, you know, he did it. But does Messi do it? And does Dembele do it? Does Coutinho do it? So you can take, well, partly take Messi out of the game by making him do the defensive work, which he's not used to doing, because he doesn't have to.
There's so many notes for encouragement. And this is not writing Barcelona off in any way, shape, or form, because they're an absolutely amazing side. And Messi still has the ability to single-handedly win. He's got 10 goals in 8 games in the Champions League this season. It's ludicrous. He still scores more goals than he plays games, basically, which is just absolutely terrifying.
34 and 32 in the league.
Exactly,
well.
You know, and you know, Suarez. But like, Suarez hasn't scored a goal in the Champions League yet. I'd fancy him probably to get one just because it'd be Suarez. Yeah. But I said, I'm watching that Man United game the other week, the second one, and Suarez. I loved Luis Suarez. He's the best player. I think he's the best player ever to play for Liverpool, just in terms of his pure talent. I've never seen anything like him at all. But he looks his age. He looks like a man who's been Luis Suarez for too many years. And you play at that intensity, it starts to take its toll. Now it's one game of football. He can hurt you, of course he can, because he's world class. And then I look at around that, and you look at like Coutinho. We know Coutinho. Coutinho's not an unknown quantity to us. You know, we know him better than he probably knows himself. And even he struggled to settle in again. He's not scoring tons of goals. I think he's only got 5 goals for them in the league this season. So he's not playing at the level that he was at us. And then you're talking about, like, similarly, Dembele can hurt you, but he's not quite that level. They still rely heavily on Suarez and
Yeah, look and they've Messi got they've got they outstanding players. I think all of us would agree that, and everybody watching and listening would agree with that. But I think as a team, we're a better team. I think all around, I think all told, we're more than the sum of our parts. Whereas I believe that Barcelona are as good as Lionel Messi plays. And unfortunately for us, he plays world class almost every single game.
Yeah.
But you can still get at the defence. That's still not their strongest point. You know, you can still hit them on the counter-attack, and we're much more deadly than Manchester United and teams that have played them recently. And, you know, we will get opportunities, but I fancy Liverpool to take those opportunities in the new camp.
It'd be fascinating to see, as you say, the approach to this, because there's no pressure on us to go and get that result in there. And I don't think they'll be thinking we'll go to Anfield and do the business. That won't, you know, they won't be hinging. You don't throw away your home leg in that regard. They'll hope that we don't score away from home naturally, and they'll probably feel that they can get a goal at Anfield, but they won't be hinged upon it. So they'll be looking to get this game won, because that's how Barcelona play football. And I think no matter what they do, I can create a narrative that plays into our hands. And as you say, particularly with having to go to Anfield, regardless, provided we keep it close. I keep talking like it's going to be a 0-0 or a 1-0 or whatever, which would be perfectly fine result, but. Is it just? I feel like we can go and we've got it. Definitely got it within us to go and put a statement in at the.
I think it's a 3-2, something like that. Yeah. I was saying on the build-up show, I think it's really, really cagey first 45 minutes, and the game just explodes into life second half, and Barcelona realise that they need to try and get a goal. The only caveat to that is, I think if there's an early goal, then all better off. Anything can fucking happen at that point.
I'm really interested to see just how Suarez and Coutinho play against this Liverpool side. Obviously, there's going to be a reception for them, good or bad, at Anfield. I'm just really interested to see if they're just going to step it up another level and be like, this is what you've been missing, or do we step it up and be like, this is what yous have been missing, you know what I mean? I think that's going to be a massive narrative, which I don't really like.
Jordan Henderson walks around before the game started, fucking divoting that area of about 50 metres squared where Coutinho takes all his shots from. I reckon he just walks around fucking like that all over the place, like, go on, Phil, take your fucking shots
Phil
there,
Coutinho,
mate.
Phil Coutinho, we just need to go and
twat him everywhere.
It's got the potential to see what Raheem Sterling does at Anfield with Phil Coutinho. I think that's where, I think he's in quite a fragile place as a footballer right now, and if we can tap into that, we can make sure that he has a really poor game. I see Suarez the complete opposite. Yeah. I think Suarez steps up regardless of how he's the reception.
You'll get more out of Suarez.
It's a dangerous game doing it to somebody like that with that much needle and stuff, but Coutinho's fragile at the moment.
How do we then do that? Because obviously with Rafa Benitez, when he comes back to Anfield, you wait until you're winning to even acknowledge singing his name and stuff, because you respect this team so much. Luis Suarez's song,
will not have his song sung unless we are
5-0.
Yeah, exactly. Clearly comfortable and through at the end, or he gets substituted off at Anfield. I think
the atmosphere is going to be tasty for both of them. Yeah. It's going to be worse for Phil Coutinho, of course, but I think before the game, they're going to get a little round of applause. Maybe not Coutinho. Suarez will get a big round of applause as soon as the whistle goes. We're booing. Yeah. We are booing. Yeah. Every one of their players, not just them.
That would be a lovely, lovely
thing. It's going to be a boo. That's what we do, because particularly against teams who have the ball. Yeah. We can't do it against teams that don't have the ball, because you're just booing your own players. You're effectively, and we've done that before. The Southampton coach treated for the League Cup, as I recall. But that's just what it'll be. We'll boo and hiss and jeer and all that kind of stuff. Just see what the new camp's like. Me and Chris are flying there this evening. You put you're in a cage in the top corner, aren't you? So I can't see it being a great, a lot of noise that we're going to be able to impact on it. But I can't wait to be there. I've never seen a game at the new camp before.
It's bucket list shit.
Yeah.
I was strongly considering a couple of years ago going over and seeing a game with Barcelona and Xavi and Iniesta before they all retired, and I'm genuinely gutted that I never. But I'm also glad, because now I'm getting to go and see Liverpool play against Messi.
Yeah, it matters more, doesn't it? I went to the friendly against them at Wembley, and it was fantastic. Great afternoon out and what have you, but
you ain't seen Lionel Messi, in the same way that.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Seeing him in a pre-season friendly, ain't seeing him in the Champions League fucking
exactly. And moreover, seeing Liverpool doing it in some token thing where Liverpool were nowhere near deserving to be even on the same pitch as Barcelona, because we weren't a Champions League team at that time. We were a Europa League team, basically, if that. So, being able to go and to go level pegging, to go toe to toe. And a real sense, it was funny enough, just as an aside, of I got that. No spoilers for Avengers, but watching it and seeing the end of run of 11 years of movies was the same way as watching that when we went to the Istanbul 10-year reunion. Yeah. And you got that real nostalgic feeling and feeling really upset, and we're only a few years away from me thinking we'll never get back to this again, and now we're going to the new camp, and not fingers crossed that everything we go and technically master and blah, blah, blah. I feel like we could go play our own game in the new camp and win.
I love the fact that we've had so many, since Klopp came in, we've had these European adventures. Obviously, the first season he comes in, we play every game that is possible to play in a season, and we get to this Europa League final, and it starts bubbling up, and we got that away vibes of being in the fan park and everyone having a great time, and then songs start coming out from these away trips, and that's what it's all garnered. Everything is such a feel-good factor around Liverpool. There's people in Barcelona right now making a new song for Fabinho. You know what I mean? That's the thing. People are getting bladded, having a great time, and creating new memories, creating new, legends from people going over there. And that's what Klopp, that's what this team has built. And it's genuinely unbelievable that we get to say that. You know what I mean? There's not many teams ever get to ever say that. And we're supporters, we're fans of this club who are doing this. And there is literally nothing better.
Yeah. Just think about this season alone, where we've been. We've been to fucking Paris Saint-Germain. We've been to Bayern Munich. We're on our way to the fucking new camp. Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. Include last year when you go in Roma away as well, and you get so much of the Champions League final.
Cathedrals of European football.
It's not even 12 months.
Yeah. No, it's true, isn't it? And when you consider that Champions League run. The Champions League group appearance under Brendan Rodgers, where we went
to Bernabeu, we played Real Madrid, we weren't in the same fucking league.
Exactly. We were just hoping that somehow these players that we all deep down in our heart of hearts knew weren't good enough would be able to pull something out somehow. It would all come good on the night. it doesn't feel like that. It feels like if we were to go out, it would have to be, it would have to go, something would have to eat on the flip side, would have to go spectacularly wrong. Yeah, same as the Champions League final.
Here's the difference for me. Yeah. Barcelona can play at their best and we can still win.
Yeah.
Whereas in the, like that Real Madrid game, we'd need Real Madrid to have a bad night and play at our best.
Yeah.
I think we can be, if both teams are playing at their best, I think Liverpool win.
It's amazing.
It's fucking crazy.
Isn't that brilliant? Absolutely brilliant. Right, one quick question before we wrap the podcast. That comes from Alex Sawyer. Do you think that the speed trend has improved as the reason he didn't get as much of the debate for young player of the year as he deserves, as it is almost expected that he's going to play great every week? My thoughts on this are, I wonder whether it was just a political move to make sure Sterling won an award, to be perfectly honest, you know, about him getting the young, him being in the
be
young
fair,
category.
If you, well, listen, I think Sterling deserved the Young Player of the Year award.
He did, because he was in, because he's in the category. Same as Harry Kane getting it the year before. It's that, it's right for them to get it because they're the best players in that category, but it's a shame for Trent. I mean, the fact is, maybe he'll win it when he's 24.
Well, he'll get it next season, it's fine.
Yeah.
That's the thing. In regards to that question, you can have bad games and the team can perform. So I don't think it shows too much. This team's so good and I think he gets the cover from the centre-backs that he needs and stuff. I mean, he hasn't had many bad games at all, but it is a shame. I think it's purely just because Sterling's been fantastic. And what you were saying before, Ross, in terms of defending not being a very, like, you always want the goals and assists. I mean, Trent got the assist, which is the weird part of it. But I think just the defending side of things, you don't get looked at. It's a unit, again, as you were both saying, it's a unit. So maybe that's why I didn't really get it.
I think it's a combination of both. I think it feels like a runners-up award for Sterling. And that's not to take away he doesn't deserve it. It's kind of gone, well, here you go. Because I think there was some debate whether, I think it might have been him and Bernardo Silva that shouldn't have been in that category anyway, but they were because of the way the age works and the start
of the
season.
They should have been in the category.
Bernardo Silva shouldn't have been, I don't think.
I think when the season starts, you have to be a certain age, and I think they both fell into that.
You said, you know, he's improved as a footballer as well as off the pitch as well, so you can't take that away from him. Yeah. And City are currently top of the league. So.
Absolutely. And I think we all know it. Trent's got a lot. There's a lot of time and a lot of potential awards for him to win. At 20 years old, there are no better young right backs in
the issue with that award isn't that Sterling won it, it's that the fucking ages is wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's really it.
Yeah. It's like how Disney thinks you're an adult once you're over 12.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
Absolute bullshit.
What's Trent Sealing? If we're literally thinking about it, can he become a legend? I know we're talking about him as a 20-year-old. Do you reckon he moves into midfield? Or do you reckon he's like a Philip Lahm? Stays at one club, becomes the captain at the end of the day, and we're looking at him when he retires, and we're like,
That's exactly it.
As long as he continues his development and maintains that level, why not? Because he's local, he's homegrown, loves the club, etc. And as long as you're maintaining the level of everything else around him as well, then yeah, why not? There'd be no need for him to, unless you got to the point where he's won 5 Premier League titles and 5 European Cups, and he just goes, oh my God, I'm going to play in Spain for a couple of years just to get out the house a bit, like, you know what I mean?
He's
get out of your mum's house.
Philip Lahm, he's Roberto Carlos, he's fucking Dani Alves. Yeah, that's where he's heading for if he carries on.
We never know, of course, because he might, because we don't know his ceiling. He might, if he continues to improve, we'll be stupid not to put him into midfield. We might just find you, because you just don't know. Okay, look at the Jordan Henderson stuff. None of us thought we'd ever see Henderson playing back in the position he's been playing in the last couple of games, and he's 28 years old. Mm. You know, you're not meant to be doing that. You're not meant to change positions too much as you get older than that. But it might be that we might just find Trent gets an opportunity in midfield at some point, and we never look back, and he goes further. But right now, the point is, footy's changed so much. The fullback is not an embarrassing position to play anymore. It's you are pivotal to how the game is. This is why so many wingers, Man United have been using wingers as fullbacks for years now, that he might not need to. He might be able to score 5-odd goals, get 15 assists, and win all the trophies he wants at right back.
What would you prefer to do? I know it's a lot more running, but say you're fit enough to do that, would you rather play Genie's midfield role and not really get forwards, not really get goals, not really get assists, or do what Trent's doing and have a bit of fun getting forward. You know what I mean? It's completely different now. It's not not the same as what it was.
He's going to score a goal at some point.
Yeah, defo.
And he's not going to look back. Like, because that's the one thing that's missing from his game, because he gets the shots.
Wolves.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But he has that, like, you know, when he burst in, I'm not saying he hasn't scored. I mean,
like, he's going to score against Wolves.
Yeah,
free kick, 92nd minute.
But you've got the free kicks.
He's not even filled out yet. He's 20.
No.
Like, remember when Jordan Henderson first came to the club and he was like, he was 22 was he when he came? 21, I don't know. 21. And then you've seen him over the years and now he's grown into like a chest. Man. You know what I mean?
A chest.
And literally, Trent Alexander-Arnold's got that coming.
Yeah.
He's already got everything.
Yeah.
And then he's going to have the strength on top of it. And he's going to have more experience playing with the best winger ever.
And he's going to have played against every world-class opponent in world football by that point as well.
Oh, the future's
done. After tomorrow, we already will have.
Pretty much. Yeah. Absolutely. Brilliant. Thank you very much, everyone, for watching, for listening, and for subscribing. If you're listening on podcast services, make sure you give it a 5-star review. If you're watching on YouTube, share it and drop a like on it as well. Other than that, thank you very much. Make sure you check out the subscriber exclusive Q&A, which is us for answering random and weird questions. And of course, go over to Mitch and Page for our podcast.
Go on.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.